Lovely cushion header. Pajero! Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a headshot! Well, you take a tap in these circumstances. What you have to do.
Hey everyone, welcome to the LFC Couch. My name is Nish, your host. We're at the dawn of the big game. It is Manchester United versus Liverpool at Old Trafford. And so I thought I'd bring along a familiar voice, familiar face as well. Steve Wilding, how are you, man?
I'm very good, mate. Glad this international break is coming to an end and looking forward to the small game that we have this weekend. How are you?
It's pretty good, mate. I've had probably the most relaxing international breaks of my life. We've had Colleen Rooney to keep us entertained. We've had all kinds of things happening in Bulgaria. And, you know, Liverpool's still top of the table. So it's been good times for the first time in about 30 years.
Yeah, no huge issues, no major injuries, so we're good.
Everything's there. Come back safe and sound. Hey, but it is a big game, as you mentioned. Well, it's a little game you said because you're a sly prick. But it is the big Manchester United versus Liverpool Northwest derby. And so why not bring on our friends? So I'm going to call you friends from across the road. The MUFC podcast, that's what they call it, is Tom Simpson. How are you, man?
No, really good, man. Really appreciate having me on. I'd say it's a pleasure, but I don't think it'll be a pleasure. I think it might be a bit of pain for myself in this podcast. So
that'll
bring enjoyment for you and your listeners. So.
Hey, look, we go nice sometimes, and they're probably expecting a few jabs. So we'll do a couple here and there because it's a bit of fun. It's the first time in a long time we've been able to do this. So
it's a shame we didn't have these podcasts back maybe 10 years ago when we were winning things. It would have been good.
Yeah,
we don't need to talk about 10 years ago.
Well, we do, because wasn't there a certain 4-1 game at Old Trafford?
Oh, God, that was 10 years ago, wasn't it?
That was, yeah.
10 years ago.
I think that was the season we won the league.
Shit. That was the let's talk about facts, baby. It's slightly different now.
God, Jesus. Where does the time go?
I know, that was crazy. Dosena. God, that was a good goal. But yeah, look, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's not easy I'm kind of working out now to come on a rival team's podcast, never chat. So just quick applaud you for that. So thanks a lot for popping on. And we'll try to be nice, but we'll just
try your best.
Try our very best. We did try and do this in a pub. I mean, you are the pubcast. Unfortunately, I've come down with the flu, as you can probably tell by my voice. Steve lives on the other end of, you know, the planet. And well, compared to me right now. And yeah, we just couldn't get it happening. So here we are. This is the best we can do. We're having a chat. So yeah, look, big game this weekend. A lot of questions. Do you mind if we just jump straight into a few fan questions for you, Tom?
Hey, go for it.
All right, sweet. So I'm going to go to Amanda first because she is a superstar, you know, supporter. She is chairperson of the LFC New South Wales group. She goes to score predictions for the Charity Supporters Club match this Sunday. So the Man United fans in Sydney are playing the Liverpool New South Wales fans in Sydney on Sunday before the actual Mun Live game. What do you think the score prediction is going to be between the two fan groups?
Look, I don't know about an actual score prediction, but we've played three full-sided games before, and there's just been goals and red cards in all three games. So I can predict plenty of goals.
Do you think that's going to translate?
The red cards, well, I don't expect plenty many goals on our behalf on the main game in the UK, but in all our games, there's been, I think, a minimum of 6 goals, nice. And each team has always received a red card. But the red card hasn't been a sort of a malicious red card. It's maybe been a second yellow or maybe an over 35 player being a little bit late to the ball. So there'll be plenty of entertainment, that's for sure.
Nice. So if you're in Sydney, please head down. I don't even know where it's at because I'm not going.
It's at
Caramba. Yep, no idea.
Tom, are you playing?
I am. Well, I'll see how I pull up on Saturday night. I have put my name on the team sheet, but it's up for debate at the moment. I'll see how I pull up Sunday morning. I'm hoping to.
Jesus. You playing? You didn't get the call-up, did you, Steve?
No, I was denied.
They don't want midget goalkeepers, do they?
That's it. Everyone looks at me and sees the height and then says, right, he can't play in goal.
Unlucky.
They may regret the decision. We'll see. I'm going to hopefully get down there and watch it and hope that I don't see any blunders from the goalkeeper or I'll be pointing fingers.
All right, cool. I'm going to get to the second question now, and I'm actually going to preface this a little bit, because I do ask every guest, tell us, usually, why do you follow Liverpool? What's your background to it? Blah, 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 blah. So this question was actually from Adrian Burke. I think he's actually from Ireland, but now living in Sydney. But he said, you know, do you still, with the type of football that's being played right now, are you still getting up to watch every Man United game, even at 2 or 3 a.m.? And my follow-on to that is going to be, give us your background to following Man United.
Well, the type of football, to be honest, we've had to sit through 2 years of Van Gaal football. And as bad as this is, it is not as bad as it was under Van Gaal in terms of entertainment level. So those 2 or 3 a.m. kickoffs, they were a test. And now, as frustrating as it is, the entertainment level has picked up slightly. So yeah, I could count on, in the last 10 years, I could count on one hand the games I haven't watched live, and they'd probably sort of coincide with maybe it might be a Champions League game or a Europa game at 7 a.m. when maybe I have an early start at work. But yeah, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., Monday morning, whenever. Yeah.
Standard.
It's just part of the religion, I think. And how did I come to support United? God. My grandmother is from Ireland and she used to live in Salford, not far from the ground, and every season used to send over the kit, the new kit sort of thing. And so it was the first football team I knew. And obviously then when I went over there with family, that is where we stayed. So a lot of the boring stuff, first ground I went to, first game I went to, first players I knew about, etc.
Wow.
And that was sort of the mid-90s, so obviously coincided with quite a successful time. So I'm sort of proudly labelled maybe a glory hunter, but maybe just lucky, I think.
No, definitely. I mean, it does make a huge difference when your family's involved. And people know my connection to the club is both my brothers were born in Liverpool, and so I didn't have a choice. Yeah. But it's it makes a massive difference in family. And having that when the grandmother's sending kits over, that is huge.
Well, it was the only team I knew about. It was, okay, this is the red team, I'll support the red team. And then, yeah, you just naturally sort of grow from there and you learn a little bit more sort of every day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my best mate in New Zealand, I moved from England to New Zealand in 95. My best mate, Michael Lawson, he was a massive Man United fan, so we're constantly clashing. And he had his bloody bedroom filled with Beckham shirts, Beckham posters and stuff. I was like, such a weirdo. we just get the shits of each other growing up through high school, having those clashes.
Well, it was like now, like, I used to have all the Beckham posters, and now I think my wife, she wants to hang the Beckham posters up, so...
Oh, nice. Yeah,
she's on the other foot now.
What, you mean she doesn't want Phil Jones posters?
No, she skipped on Phil Jones.
Imagine walking into someone's room and it's like a nightmare scene of just Phil Jones posters and facials everywhere. Well, we've had like John Flanagan. Even Robbie Fowler when he was younger wasn't the prettiest face, just a very good footballer at least. So there you go. All good. You're getting up. You're watching the games. Good on you. Other people. What scoreline would be needed for Ole to get the sack after the game? That's a bit forward thinking.
Yeah, we actually discussed that on our latest episode. I don't think we can put a sort of a cut and dry answer in terms of, okay, if it's 3-0, he keeps it. And if it's 4-0, he loses his job. However, in relation to the way our board works, you never know, that could possibly be a line of thinking for them. I personally don't think he does get the sack after this. If, however, it does go horribly wrong and Liverpool have a great game, United have a bad game, and the end result is, God, who knows, a 4-5, 6-0, which I don't think can happen, but possibly, you never know. Possibly he gets the sack. If it's something embarrassing, I think whatever the club... that would always be a possibility, but I don't think he gets the sack regardless of if it's a 2-3-0 defeat. I don't think he gets the sack.
Yeah, because Mourinho got the sack last year, didn't he?
Lines up almost perfectly, doesn't it? Kind of weird how that works.
But it's one of them games, like you say, if we win, say, 1-0, 2-0, I'd be very surprised if he goes and gets the sack, because it's a game, looking at the form, that's going with form, so it's not a shocking result. But if you put in a terrible performance and it ends up a big, big scoreline, that's an embarrassment for the club. So, like you say, you never know. But I'd be surprised if he goes after this game.
I think a lot of it, I'd say, comes down to the performance. I remember in Mourinho's last season, I think it was the second game of the season, we lost 3-0 at home to Tottenham. But the performance was very good. And there was no sort of real outrage after that. Okay, we got pumped 3-0, but the performance was there. If the performance isn't there this time and it's a 3-0 loss, that is when action might be taken.
Yeah, I was hearing a lot of those stories. I mean, people always try and put down Klopp and stuff and say, oh, he didn't win shit for years and rah, 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 rah. But every single year we saw improvement. We saw the team finding a look, finding a shape. And he wasn't just improving the squad, but he was also improving the club, like the fans. Everyone sees that, you know, what other fans like to be embarrassed or call us embarrassed about was the 1-1 draw with West Brom or 2-2 with West Brom or something. And we were all holding hands and thanking the fans. It was because our fans just gave up on the club quite badly, even the home fans and sometimes the traveling fans. And Klopp was like, we need to bring the fans back. And if we don't do that, we're going to continue going down a bad way. And so even though we had a poor result, he just was bringing the fans back to Anfield and making them a lot louder, a lot stronger. People were blaming foreigners all the time and blah, 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 blah. No, it's just shit football, to be honest. And and we just needed to bring them back. And so if you're playing good football, I can imagine the crowd being berserk. And mate, let me get your thoughts. I mean, this is going to be, regardless of how poor your league position is right now, what do you think the Old Trafford fans are going to be like?
I think in this game, there'll just be a natural buzz. I think the pressure on Solskjaer, obviously in your position, we can almost now sell, one of the things we have to look forward to is maybe derailing your title hopes. So there'll be that natural buzz there. So I think the crowd will has always been behind Solskjaer. The 70,000 inside the crowd, inside Old Trafford, have always been behind Solskjaer. It is a completely different atmosphere compared to what you see online in terms of Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, etc.
Yeah.
They're always very supportive. And I remember, it's funny saying, one of the, again, back to a 3-0 defeat, the season you almost won the league, you beat us 3-0 at Old Trafford. That game there was potentially one of the best atmospheres post-Fergie. When we went 3-0 down, I think it was 20 minutes to go, and Old Trafford just erupted. So I think in times like this, when it does get tough, it almost brings out the best in the Old Trafford crowd. It's when, sadly, when you're sort of successful and expecting wins every week, that is when the atmosphere sort of was tempered a little bit.
Yeah, it's a difference between, it's a funny gap, isn't it? It's like the lower table teams where they kind of expect to lose. And so when they do lose, they're still in the crowd and they're still chanting away. They're still having fun. And then it seems like between 10 and 3 usually are the ones that start heading for the gate when the game's lost. Yes. And it's the top two teams or three teams in historical, you know, Liverpool, Man United, those guys who stick around regardless. You know, we're losing 3-0 in the Champions League final in Istanbul and the crowd starts singing You Never Walk Alone. Or you guys are losing 3-0 at home to Liverpool and the crowd just erupts. It's what makes proper fan bases. And I'm sure the ones that do go regularly to Old Trafford are the proper fan bases, and online is such a cesspit of dickheads. It's for everyone.
Yeah, it's not a fun place at the moment.
I can imagine. Can you tell us about it? Talk to us. Give us some inside goss. What's going on in your fan base online?
Oh, God, where do you want to start, Ed?
Wherever you like. What's the latest rumors and blame game? What's going on there?
Look, the blame is all directed in the right direction. It's at the board and the owners in terms of the Glazer family. The Glazers took over in 2005, late 2005. And since then, look at you sort of, I don't want to say new clubs, but you look at City and Chelsea, their owners have pumped in over £1 billion. And the Glazers have done exactly the opposite. They've taken over £1 billion out. So now you see David Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho have all failed. You look at Solskjaer now potentially failing. A lot of the fans' anger is now moving away from the manager and properly directed at Edward Wood and the board. However, the way a lot of people are going about it on Twitter isn't the way to go about it. They think a hashtag is going to make the Glazers sell. That is not going to happen. The Glazers celebrate the social media activity. That's their latest shareholders press conference, or conference call, sorry, was celebrating the fact of how many social media interactions they get. So I don't think a hashtag is going to save anything. And then if you sort of question that hashtag, say, well, is that really going to do anything? Maybe if you come to Old Trafford and do something about it, maybe. I remember you guys a couple of seasons ago staged that walkout in relation to ticket prices.
Yeah.
That was physically doing something, visibly doing something, which correct me if I'm wrong, but ultimately had a positive outcome. I think they did lower or at least freeze prices or something.
Yeah.
So something happened. A hashtag on Twitter, okay, you might get a few retweets and likes, but it is just creating needless negativity.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of Muppets called the FSG Out Crew. They really are embarrassing. It's dwindled away because there's a lot of us who always understood what needed to happen with FSG. We'd all love to have sugar daddy owners, but they're so few and far between. No one really realistically saw it. And we knew that, A, we need to get the wage bill under control. And so a lot of people that, and unfortunately, Rafa Benitez actually brought in like 50 players, played 10 of them. And a lot of those people who didn't play were on huge wages. And so we had to really get that under control. We're on the edge of administration as well. So we couldn't buy people at a big rate to break FFP. So we had to work on our commercials, because what Man United did so well through your glory period of 90s and the noughties was get amazing commercial deals done. When we didn't, we still had pretty poor ones. And so we had to work on getting our commercial aspect, which is where a few people got hired. And, you know, I think his name's Ed Hogan or something like that. Hogan, someone. He's a chief commercial officer. And we've done amazingly well at doing that. And now we're commercial giants, so we can start spending stupid money on individual players. Within boundaries, of course, unlike certain other Manchester clubs. So, and so we kind of always saw something, and they didn't know football, so they put their trust in individuals, and those unfortunately were the wrong individuals, and they kind of just started learning and learning and learning, and you know, people got pissed off because they saw the likes of City and Chelsea constantly winning, and we weren't investing in our club. But there was always in my head a rhyme and a reason for everything. But there's a lot of frustrated fans who just want the best for the club and the FSG out and creating websites and creating podcasts devoted to it. And then when things started going right with the, you know, hiring of Klopp and all this stuff, they genuinely believe that they were the ones. They're the reason that it all happened. They put the pressure on FSG. It's embarrassing.
But then they're still out there, even before the Champions League final, when you still saw them out there who were complaining and saying Klopp wasn't good enough and saying he's a perennial loser. He doesn't want to win trophies. He just wants to take his wage. And it's like, are you not watching what's happening at the club?
Yeah, Tom, you must have plenty of these people, right? Just people who just don't get it.
Yeah, well, go scroll through my Twitter timeline. I'll do my best to avoid it. But yeah, it's something you try and avoid. But then that emotion in you as a fan want to try and defend the club and sort of be positive about it. And you find yourself overreacting at times.
Okay, so on that positivity, talk about this weekend. Talk positive. What's going to happen?
Talk positive.
What's the good things that Man United are going to do?
Well, I'm not going to talk about the good things we're going to do, but I'm just talking football math. The longer a team goes winning, the closer you are to your next loss. And you guys, as fantastic as you are doing, I'm going to take the hat off to it. You're going to lose eventually. And I think deep down, there is a part of you that does sort of realise if you are going to come unstuck, it is this weekend.
I think you put a tweet out earlier, didn't you, Nish, about nerves starting to kick in?
Yes.
It's just how football works. I remember when United were flying under Fergie, if we were winning titles, no matter where Liverpool were, this was the game. If we were away at Anfield, I thought, to be honest, we're probably going to lose this one. And I have a feeling there is a little bit of doubt creeping in. And look, in terms of fan emotion and the fan perception going into a game has no real impact on the 11 players on the pitch. But I do have a feeling it might just sort of tinkle into the players that if you've got to lose a game, this is potentially the game that's going to happen.
Look, this game to me has got nil all, frustrating draw, one shot on target by both teams.
we'll be lucky to get a shot on target.
It's mad. Steve, sorry, I keep hogging the mic. Do you have questions for him?
Yeah, I've got a few, actually. I won't rattle them all off. But, Tom, you mentioned earlier about the how the clubs run with the Glazers there. I mean, as an outsider, I always looked at United and I thought one of the biggest issues or biggest mistakes that the ownership made was back in 2013. Obviously, Sir Alex Ferguson retired, which, as much as I hate to say it, great manager, did great things at the club. Him going was one thing, but I think the fact, didn't David Gill and Ferguson both go at the same time?
in the same window.
So you've got your manager who's been there donkey's years and won trophy after trophy and was Man United. You think of Man United, you thought of him. Then you've got David Gill leaving at the same time. And I don't think Edward Woodward is the right man either. But that's as an outsider looking in. So I think as for the club itself, that was a huge mistake to let those two big influences on the club to walk out in the same window and hope that they can continue doing what they're doing.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I think the more time goes by, I think a lot of people do realise as big a loss as Fergie was going at the time, the real one that hit us was probably David Gill. And who knows, at the time, Ferguson has said he was sort of almost planning to stay on, but his wife lost her sister around maybe December time, around Christmas time in that last season. And that was his decision to, okay, this is going to be the end. So, and David Gill had already made that decision a year or two before that was going to be his last season. So Ferguson was likely to stay on, but due to personal circumstances, made a decision with a few months to go in the season. So we can say it was a mistake or bad timing, a bit of both, but a club the size of United should be in a position to deal with that or sort of have certain scenarios and certain contingencies to prevent sort of a big hole gaping like that.
Yeah, I mean, like with Ferguson going, was obviously going to be a huge loss to the club. And as bad as David Moyes did, I think whoever took that job, it was going to be a poison chalice, wasn't it? Taken over from what Fergie had done. And you had, although you had still a very good squad, you just won the Premier League, it was quite an old squad as well.
If you look at that team, and yes, it was a very good team, but if we don't have Robin van Persie in that team, I don't know if we're going to be winning the league. Like, we're winning that league with our midfield was Tom Cleverley and Anderson in midfield. Carrick sort of came in later in the season and had obviously a pivotal role. But our two main midfielders at the start, for almost first names on the sheet, were Cleverley and Anderson. Antonio Valencia played a fair bit of right back and right midfield at the time. Ashley Young was almost a pivotal player as well because Giggs was towards the end of his career. So, yeah, it was a good team on paper, but when you actually drilled down into it, yeah, David Moyes wasn't left with the sort of what you'd call a title-winning squad, especially age-wise, with players like Ferdinand, Vidic and Evra, Giggs, Scholes, etc., all coming to the end of the career.
Yeah, so, I mean, he didn't really have the best of sort of circumstances to walk into. And obviously, we all know what happened that season. And, I mean, he didn't even last the season, did he? So it was...
April.
Yeah, he didn't do too badly, too, in hindsight, did he?
You compare it to now. I'd do anything to be sitting in sixth or seventh.
I think his contract, his initial term, has only just finished, hasn't it?
Yeah, he only just finished getting paid, I think, at the end of last season.
And then in that time, you had Giggs, Van Gaal, Mourinho, and now Solskjaer. It's
unbelievable.
And that's, I think, where I look at. Everyone says you need to give managers time, but there's been problems there throughout with each sort of manager you've had. Obviously, the Moyes one was going to be difficult. Van Gaal, you mentioned it earlier, the style of football that you guys were playing under him, the fans weren't happy about. And then the appointment of Mourinho, which everyone thought was going to be a great thing. Now, I've got my own opinions of Mourinho that I think he brings short-term success to clubs and then leaves them in a bit of a problem, which he won trophies at Man United. Obviously, you can't take that away from him, but the state the club was in last season, I think he had to go as well. There was just... he'd lost the players, which he's done a few times at clubs, and now obviously Solskjaer came and you had that initial bounce where you won a ridiculous amount of games in a row and then the club threw the contract at him and it's just gone sort of... The performances are... I don't think the performances are that great. You might disagree, but the results have gone as well. And it's ever since they got that contract in him and he got him to sign it, it's dropped off.
Yeah, no, I agree with 100% of things you said, but I think a lot of those things, the common denominator is upstairs in terms of the Woodward, Ed Woodward and the Glazers. Some great managers there in terms of Van Gaal and Mourinho both ultimately failed and they shouldn't be failing at a club like United. So, the manager should improve, Solskjaer should improve, he should be doing better. But I think any manager who comes in is managing with his hands tied behind his back in terms of the structure from Woodward down.
I'm going to ask you a slightly 90-degree question, which does have meaning to what we're talking about. A two-part question. What are your thoughts on Mark Goldbridge?
Oof, Goldbridge. First of all, when he sort of came to prominence and he was getting his name out there, I hated the guy. Absolutely hated him. I thought he was everything that was wrong with United fans, or not so much United fans, but sort of online social media presence, etc. Sort of he's very over the top and very reactionary for views and likes. But then I think there was a stage maybe when Mourinho came in, maybe 2 years ago, a year or two ago, he almost sort of took on a parody of himself and was a bit more lighthearted. And maybe it's because I've come to accept where we are, and I don't want to say, look, we're a mid-table club, but I've accepted we're not going to be challenging for the title soon. So I've taken not my foot off the pedal, but a more lighthearted approach. And football's not sort of the end of the world. So I'm warming to him. But this season, he's sort of not treatment of Solskjaer, but he's starting to get on my nerves again. But he does provide good value.
Okay, cool. So this is the reason why I asked this question, is that he was actually on the Redmen TV podcast, which I just listened to.
Yeah.
So he made a good point about the board and about Solskjaer as well, saying he's not actually anti-Solskjaer. He says the current board should be sacked first, with a new board coming in, and then if they deem that Solskjaer is not worthy of the position, then they should sack Solskjaer. But he says the current board are so poor at what they're doing, they don't have any right to actually sack off Solskjaer first, because he believes the whole club needs a refresh. But starting with the board level, do you agree with those sentiments, that the board needs to be refreshed before they can make any managerial change?
100%. However, in saying that, in terms of we talk about the board, we have no idea who's on the board and what their role is. We need a structure. In terms of Ed Woodward at the moment is the one doing the transfers. There's Ed Woodward and his right-hand man is called Matt Judge. They're the ones doing the transfers and negotiating. I think in the Premier League, out of the 20 teams, I think there was 18 teams have some type of person in a director of football role or a technical director type of role. I think there was United and Brighton were the two teams that didn't have one. And you see the problems we have in the transfer market in terms of really poor recruitment. It falls on Edward Wood's shoulders because he's the one doing it. He didn't back Mourinho in the transfer window. Van Gaal wanted certain players. He didn't give Van Gaal those certain players. We sell players for pittance, absolutely nothing. Like some of our best players in the sort of Fergie's era. I remember we sold Nani for $1 million, Raphael for $1 million, Van Persie was almost left out the door for maybe $2 or $3 million, etc.
Jeez.
So it is Woodward and the board, but how do you sack a board? The Glazers are on top and we're bringing in money, more money than ever. So
they're happy.
The Glazers at the moment, they're cashing their checks.
Jeez. Yeah, Tom, you just mentioned it there about the transfers. I'm just interested in what you thought of this summer's transfer dealings that United did. Obviously, you brought in, was it Wan-Bissaka, Harry Maguire and Daniel James.
Who looks awesome.
All in all, I think good players individually, but what I thought is, I mean, do you think they're exactly what you needed at that time?
I think every single bit of business Solskjaer did this window was right. However, when you put all the transfers together collectively, I think it does leave questions. I think Wan-Bissaka, perfect signing. Maguire, we need an experienced defender, fantastic. Daniel James is the type of signing United have historically made, fantastic. They're all great signings, but we needed a midfielder. Getting rid of Sanchez and Lukaku, probably the right thing to do if you're going to replace them. So I think every individual bit was the right thing to do, but altogether, it almost didn't make sense. There was three great signings, but almost in the wrong positions. We needed a midfielder, needed a striker, etc.
Yeah, and I think that's the way I look at it. I sort of looked at United, and I've got quite a few friends at United fans, and my brother-in-law, who's just over at the moment, and he's a United fan, and I've had these conversations, and I feel like I keep repeating myself when I talk to them, because the way I looked at United was they needed somebody in the middle of that midfield, which... sort of an enforcer. So in the mould of, like, we've got our Fabinho, you've got Kante at Chelsea. You needed someone in that mould. And I think that was more pressing to sort than actually going out and signing Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire, who are both good defenders. But I think you should I think personally the midfield was more of a priority, but it was never addressed.
Well, I think so much of it fell on the future of Paul Pogba. I think the club was sort of resigned to the fact that he was going to go, but the deal never got done for whether United weren't accepting the bid or Real Madrid weren't sort of putting up the cash. I think if Pogba had gone, United would have then acted. But obviously keeping Pogba, I think in terms of the Glazers and Woodward, they say, well, we've kept our prize asset. We don't need to sort of add to that area of the pitch, which isn't how a big club like United should be run.
Now, I'm going to be controversial to you, and you probably know this already because you follow me on Twitter and I follow you, but I really can't stand Pogba. Nothing to do with even his hair, nothing to do with his social media. He just gives the ball away so much. Every time I watch him play, I'm like, dude, stop dribbling when you should be passing and stop passing shit. Like, stop going for the Hail Mary bullshit pass. Just pass it to the dude next to you and keep the game flowing. I mean, I try and put my head into the head of a United fan watching them play and try and think, how would I feel watching my central midfielder constantly give the ball away in stupid positions? Is this something that is brought up? What's going on?
It's brought up every 20 minutes. Okay. He divides opinion like no other. You love him or you hate him, and he does generate a lot of hate amongst United fans. I'm not just saying people don't like him. A lot of fans hate him. Wow, and on the other hand, a lot do love him. And I wouldn't say I love him, but I fall on a big fan of Pogba. I just think we look at Pogba for everything because he can do everything on his day. But we don't ask other midfielders to defend, to create, to be box-to-box. We sort of give them one job. With Pogba, if he's not doing all three of those things, he's criticised like you wouldn't believe. And he is frustrating. He does lose the ball a lot. But he's also the only player in our team who can create anything. So it's the price you pay. I think, again, you put him in a France midfield with Kante, fantastic. You put him in Juventus with quality around him, fantastic. If you put him in a Man United midfield with Matic and McTominay, with Fred, that is where he does have to do those three jobs. And he sort of tries to do too much because he does realise I'm not being over the top, but he is 10 times better than anyone we have. So he does take it upon himself to try and do too much, and that's where his game does fall apart, I think.
Yeah. I just think
that's the thing. Sorry, Nish, go on.
I was just going to... My one's really quick. I was just saying he just needs to be an attack midfielder. For a guy that gives the ball away that much, it's because he's trying to push the boundaries of a pass. He's trying to create something out of nothing. But he can't do that from central or defensive mid, which is where he seems to be playing because he needs...
His best performances for us is all... I don't want to say he was a left winger, but it was a free role where he just goes and stands on the left in a sort of an attacking position. Yeah. And that's where he just solely creates. And I wouldn't say creates like a number 10 sort of sits in there and creates... But do something where he can go and dribble, he can go and pass, he can shoot, etc. But when you do give him that responsibility, quite similar to Coutinho. But when he does have that responsibility, maybe he isn't probably that type of player. But because of the price tag, because of everything that comes with him, we sort of demand that from him. And I really don't think if we're treating everyone as equals, etc., we probably shouldn't be demanding that of him.
Yeah, fair enough. Sorry, Steve.
No. I was just going to say, because that goes back to my point earlier of where I thought Man United should have strengthened. If you'd have got a decent centre mid, a defensive mid in there who's going to go in and do all the dirty work and win the ball, that does free Pogba up. He's one of them players that this phrase, he's a luxury player, gets thrown around. So when you're dominating a game and you've got someone in there to go and do all the dirty work and win the ball, and you can get the ball to Pogba in the attacking third, and I think that's where he's more of a threat. But when he's trying to do everything and he's in the middle of the park, and like you said earlier, Nish, he gives the ball away a lot. It reminds me of Emre Can when he was at Liverpool. He used to give the ball away all the time, and it was so frustrating to watch. But with Pogba, it's a weird one because he looks like quite an athletic player. But when I watch United, when he gets the ball, he just seems to slow it down so much. Like, United have got quite quick attacking players, and a lot of the time the ball goes to Pogba. And it just slows the pace down. And I find that frustrating to watch. And I'm not a Man United fan. So I just wonder, is that something you see, Tom? Or am I just watching it differently? Because I do have, not a hatred, but I just don't like Pogba. I just don't get it.
Yeah, there is a case for him slowing the ball down. Especially, as you say, we do have quick players up front. I wouldn't say they're the smartest players. So it's almost like Pogba's on. He sees everything ahead of him. but he's on a different wavelength. Like you could almost see he sees Rashford make a run, but think, well, that's not really the right ball, so I'll hold on to it. I'll try and do something else. And it's just not clicking. Whether that a lot of that does fall on the shoulders of Pogba, he does need to do better in that sort of area of the pitch. But I think also you sort of got to apply context and what is around him. Because you look at Liverpool yourselves, when a midfielder has the ball, you'll have an option of either Arnold or Robertson either side. Where does Pogba really want to be dropping the ball out to Ashley Young or Luke Shaw, etc.? Luke Shaw, I think, is a very good player, but in terms of attacking ability, doesn't offer anything. So I think that, again, falls back on Pogba just trying to overcomplicate things to make up for the deficiencies around him.
Yeah, I think our team became infinitely better when we got rid of our skillful midfielders. So, like, when Coutinho left, who could easily beat first man every single time, but when everything went through Coutinho, so every attack, everything. If he closed down Coutinho and he had a bad game, we were shit. Nothing else happened. But then when you have Milner, Hendo, Fabinho, Gini Wijnaldum playing, who, let's be fair, Hendo's got a nutmeg in him. That's pretty much it. But what that makes our midfield do is that they do the simple stuff really well. It's a constant recycling game. It's a constant shielding game. It's not trying to do Rabonas and flicks and all kinds of crazy stuff. It is just get the ball, pass it off to someone else, and then keep the ball moving left to right, and then find a through ball out of nowhere. So, yeah.
Well, okay. As Steve just said earlier about Fabinho being sort of that enforcer in the midfield, United were heavily linked with him before he joined Liverpool. Maybe a little bit almost for a right back spot, because he obviously did play right back at Monaco, but especially in the midfield. And obviously he did go to Liverpool, so great signing for you guys. But he's that type of player that I think would, look, it's the term that is often used on Twitter and social media, it's someone who would unlock Pogba. But he is that type of, we see with France, and he obviously had Pirlo, maybe a different type of role, but that player behind at Juventus as well. And if we did have someone like that, in terms of Matic, who is not the most mobile of players, I think you'd see a better Paul Pogba, but that's not the case at the moment. So
what you guys really needed was to keep Herrera, have Fabinho.
He was a loss. He was a big loss.
Oh, Herrera. He was a massive loss. That guy was annoyingly good. I really like McTominay, which I never thought I'd ever say, but he's impressed me a lot in the last few games, at least. If you had Fabinho playing and kept Herrera as your like number eight, then Pogba being your attack midfielder, you would be just fine.
Completely. Well, the best performance under Solskjaer, Pogba had that free role, and Herrera was the one doing a lot of the donkey work. And look, that's a whole other debate how Herrera left. Don't get me started on that one.
Fair enough. So what do you think will be the midfield three? I'm guessing you're going to play three, or what are you doing this weekend?
Solskjaer is religiously lining up with a 2-3-1, so just a basic 4-2-3-1 with two sitting. Uh-huh. Personally, I'd like him just to play a natural 4-3-3, but that is just it's not happening at the moment. So my guess is two holders and a 10. Who knows? It could be Fred. I hope it's not Fred. I think it'll be Matic and McTominay. And in terms of a 10, look, personally, I would say Mata. I'm obviously a huge fan of Mata. But I think it might be Jesse Lingard might play in there.
What is your opinion of Jesse Lingard? I'm intrigued.
Personally, I like him. I get the frustrations. I get the hate in terms of his social media behavior. I get it 100%. However, as an adult, it doesn't really affect me personally. So he can do what he wants. But I do understand why people don't like it. On the pitch, though, I think he's a very good player. But he's just one of those players in terms of expectation and exposure. You sort of demand different things from him. He should be a player for us. If you put him in a Fergie team, he would be a player who would come in and play 10, 15 games. But in the current setup, he's a player who we look at, this England international who scored in cup finals, etc. We demand the world from him. He's not that player. He's not that good. He should be a squad player, but his perception now, he's I don't want to say a superstar in terms of his football and pedigree, but in terms of his name, he is almost a superstar in the way we treat him.
Right. He should be your Park Ji-sung.
He's a very good player. He's just, when he goes out of form, you do have an easy stick to beat him with because of all these off-field baggage.
Oh, yeah. Every player, I think, in the entire world, when they're off form and they're trying to fight their way back into a team, just shut down your social media.
Well, Lingard does the opposite. When he's out of form, that's when he gets more loud on social media.
See, we had Emery Can and Loris Karius. They have shit games like, I'm a model. Look at me. We're like, guys, put the fucking thing away. No one wants to see it. Okay, Lingard. Okay, I do remember he nearly scored. I think he came off the bench, and then Alisson Becker, he tried a round.
Alisson. Yeah, he went through on the one-on-one, didn't he? And Alisson came out and sort of scooped it away. Great save.
A mini orgasm for me right there, just watching that. I was like, we have a goalkeeper. First time in ages.
Actually, I would go with Lingard, because Alisson is back for you, I'm assuming, is he?
He is, yeah. He's starting as well.
Just going back on that Mourinho's last game, that was, I remember, one of Alisson's rare mistakes. He fumbled the ball, obviously.
Yeah, Lingard scored.
So, a Lingard play gets the nod for me over Mata.
I'm very wary about Alisson going straight back in, man. I'm really worried about it.
Yeah, I think we spoke on our WhatsApp group, didn't we, saying that I think both of us said we'd rather Adrian stay in for this game.
And Genk, bring in Alisson back in.
Bring in Alisson for Genk, because Alisson isn't going to be sharp. I don't care how much training he's had. I'd like to see Adrian given another game, because he's been doing well. And then get Alisson back in for Genk and go from there.
Yeah, you can just smell a drop ball Howler. Or something. Yeah. Or roll like between the legs.
He did it in pre-season, didn't he? On his first game back, he just came out and dropped the ball and gave away a penalty.
Oh, God.
So, I'm hoping it's none of that.
It's good. I can see these nerves kicking in now. It's good.
Oh, I'm a mess, honestly.
I'm not nervous yet. It's not started. I think as we get closer, because we've got the whole weekend to wait, I think then I'll start, because all the other games will have been played. So Man City may have picked up 3 points or dropped points, and then it's like, all right, our game to go. And I think that's Sunday afternoon or when the nerves will start to kick in, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, Man United fans have kind of got a six-pointer going on here. If you win, you not only get yourself up the table, but you also get Liverpool closer to Man City. But then I don't know if that's
100%.
I don't know who you'd prefer to win, Man City to win the title or Liverpool to win the title. I'm sure Man City to win the title.
Stupid question. I would prefer Man City every day. I don't care if they win 5 titles in a row.
Yeah, I thought you would.
100%.
Pricks.
No question.
Understandable, though. it's painful. That it's more like a 9-pointer then, isn't it?
I do have a concern about them one day winning a quadruple. That is a concern, I must admit. Winning the league, though, then winning the Champions League, I have no dramas. I do have a concern if they happen to, which won't happen, but you never know. If they ever did a quadruple, that is when.
It's possible.
That wouldn't be good. That wouldn't be good for anyone.
Honestly, it's possible. Didn't Fergie once say that winning the domestic treble was impossible? And Man City went and did that last season.
Yeah, look, if one team's going to do it, they're dropping off a little bit now, but they've obviously got the resources to fix that quite quickly, I think.
Well, if you want to think about it this way, about last season's Champions League, they were one VAR decision away from facing Ajax in the semi-final and facing us in the final. And the way that we played in the final, they could have beaten us, I'll be honest. So, that was that close to winning a quadruple, a VAR decision, which I love VAR. I don't care what anyone says. I'm one of the few people in the world who loves VAR. It's only going to benefit Liverpool this season, I reckon. So painful. Okay, who were your attackers? Do you think Young is going to play? Because Young usually does well against Salah in back.
Well, Young will be in the back four. I'd assume Luke Shaw won't be fit. So I assume Ashley Young will play at left back.
Yeah. So Young and left back, right will be Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
You'd hope so. The reports are that he's back, but he's been out for a few weeks now. So,
Is it Lindelof?
Hoping he's back.
Is it Lindelof and Maguire?
It's Lindelof and Maguire. Personally, I would go to Unzebi. However, I think, and that's not a slight on Lindelof. Lindelof is more than fine. I just think to Unzebi's shown a little bit more so far this season. However, the type of game that it is, and with Solskjaer being under so much pressure, I think it's an easy pick in just terms of experience. I think you'll definitely go for Lindelof.
Sure. And Rashford, who scored a banger for England, would he be playing more? Would he play in the left of the front three? Or
look, we hope he plays on the left. He's been the number nine for us since Martial got injured. The reports are that Martial will be back, whether he's fit or not, who knows. If Martial does play, Rashford will go to the left, but they interchange quite often. They're a very similar player. I assume it would be Rashford on the left, Martial up front. And he doesn't play there, but I think just with those two fit, Daniel James will have to go to the right-hand side.
Right, I was going to say, you've usually been playing Pereira, haven't you, on the right?
Unfortunately, yes. And then Solskjaer realises that's not working, then moves him into his natural position after an hour. And then
every game.
You never know.
Oh, fuck, I've done it again.
You never know. So Pereira could play on the right. I'd be surprised. I think Daniel James will have to play.
Yeah, Daniel James is very, very good. But then I'm thinking if you're looking at the England setup, it'll be Rashford versus Trent, who know each other very, very, very well. So I don't know who's going to win out of that. Rashford's been playing well, I guess.
Well, no, Rashford hasn't been playing well. He scored the good... I actually didn't watch his performance against the England match in Bulgaria. I didn't see it. It was obviously a great goal, but his performances for United lately, they've just been so poor. And he has been up front, and it's in a tough... It's sort of a tough position for him.
But he's been playing a position that's not his main strength, isn't he? He's been asked to... I see some people moaning about him, saying he's not scoring enough, and then they're saying he's not creating enough. So, one second, is he a number 9? Is he a number 10? What are people expecting of him?
Yeah, 100%. He's definitely not a number 9 striker, and that is what we're sort of demanding of him at the moment. And you do feel for him because that's not his job. So, it's hard to criticise him. However, just in terms of the basics in that sort of role, he's not performing. So he does deserve some criticism, but a lot of it has been over the top.
Interesting. Well, what's your score prediction then?
Prediction or hope? I don't know if they're the same thing. like I said, look, and this does sort of hang on a lot of the hope I do have, but there is going to come a time, like it or not, for you, like, you are going to lose a match. And football does this so often, I can just see us winning 1-0, whether that be, I said on the podcast last night, on the one I do with the United fans, I said 1-0 Rashford, just a feeling. And a lot of that is hope, and it is stupid, because you look at the odds, I think we're paying about $4 something, which is, stupid. I think, the first time I've ever seen that at Old Trafford.
Yeah, and it's a dumb thing to do as well. It's like you have to know that in every year how badly Liverpool have always done, we always step up for Man United, and you can just see it happening the other way around. It's just the crowd's going to be up for it, which will bring the team up for it, and it's just going to go berserk, and I'm worried.
Good
Steve,
to hear.
Steve, what's your prediction?
Obviously, looking at the table and the squads, it all points towards... Liverpool should be getting a result, but as you've just mentioned there, when we play against each other, no matter where each other is in the league, that form goes out the window. Like you said, the atmosphere is going to be electric. So I think we're going to go out hard, and I think we're going to try and silence the crowd quite early. I don't think it's going to be a walkover that some people are expecting, but I do think we'll have enough to get the win, and I think go for a 2-0 away win. That's what I'm thinking at the moment. That might change dramatically as we get closer to the game, but at the moment we'll go for a 2-0 win.
Okay.
And I'm going to back Salah to finally score his first goal against Man United for Liverpool, because he hasn't scored against United. And that'll also be Klopp's first win against Man United at Old Trafford. So we're going to, like Tom's just said, our winning runs got to come to an end. Those losing runs have got to come to an end as well. So Klopp will pick up his first win at Old Trafford, and Salah will get his first goal against Man United.
Wow. Who's the other goal scorer?
I'm going to go with Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby Firmino. Nice.
I think that's where we go back to last season's game, where it was just a shambles of injuries. We lost him early on, and United had about 14 injuries. And straight away, whenever Bobby Firmino's not in our team, we look like a different beast completely. And I think we struggled without him. And then obviously the other injuries just killed the game. But I think he's going to be huge in this. So yeah, I'll go for Mo and Bobby and a nice 2-0 win.
Jesus. Well, I've built my confidence up again. I've put my nerves up off the floor and thrown them away. I'm going to go with, at the end of the first half, we've just snuck in a sneaky bullshit goal, maybe a Matip header from a corner that we probably didn't deserve to win, but VAR didn't see it. Comes off a couple of hands and then goes in the goal. And then we score a couple of goals early-ish before like the 65th minute, And then he goes crumble and we score two more before the end of the game. 5-0 winners.
Yeah, the old Nish is back.
The old Nish is back.
Okay, we definitely won't be doing a post-match podcast if that's the case.
Oh, boy. If that happens, I mean, I've just, it's completely unrealistic, but that's, I'm hoping that's the way it goes, where it just becomes a crumbling mess and you guys are, you do actually see Old Trafford walk out.
Well, that is a concern with this team in terms of when things don't go well, the team does sort of mentally crumble. It's very sort of opposite to what you expect of a Man United team, but that is when they're under pressure and things aren't going their way.
Yeah,
everyone's sort of, there's no leader. Everyone's looking around for someone to do something, but there is no real. There's no Roy Keane in there. There's no Rio Ferdinand. There's no Nemanja Vidic.
Yeah,
our biggest leader, to be fair, in that team is probably Harry Maguire. Maybe David De Gea. Well, De Gea is out injured.
Yeah,
you got Harry Maguire in there now, calling the shots, which is a sad sign of the times. Well, not for you guys, obviously, but for us, it's a sad sign of the times.
Who's going to be your stand-up player though in that game?
I think it's going to have to be, I have a feeling it might be Rashford. Maybe the goal might just turn around a little bit of form. And I think, look, from what I watch of Liverpool and what I would hope to exploit, I think you guys will obviously be attacking. And I think in terms of that fullback area, we are dangerous on the break. If we do counterattack well, that is where we do have a bit of sort of a bit of a chance to, I think, expose you guys at the back. So I think it'll be either Marcus Rashford or Daniel James. I don't know, down either left or right-hand side.
Yeah.
But I think if we're going to get any joy, it'll be in behind your fullbacks with a bit of pace.
Fair enough. Steve, who do you think's going to stand up for Liverpool? Steve? Hello? Is anyone there?
Steve's gone.
Battery the nose has kicked in. Oh, well, no more Steve. Okay.
Now I'm back.
Oh, there you are.
He's back.
What the hell, Steve?
I don't know what happened.
Just fell asleep on us. Who do you think is going to be the star player for Liverpool?
Bobby.
Nice.
I think he's going to be, just the way he dictates a lot of the play we do. I would say him, and then closely followed, I think Fabinho is going to be big in this game as well.
I was going to call Fabinho too.
So they're my two. I say Bobby, just pip it.
Yeah. I think Fabinho's really started to stand up in these big games, and I think he's been our form player all season, just quietly performing in the background and just being a monster for us in the middle of the field, which is what we missed for a long time, and allowing Henderson to actually look good with his cross-field passes and running and everything like that. So, yeah, Fabinho, he's our man. Cool. Any shout-outs or last thoughts for your side, Tom?
No, I'm just absolutely praying every night I go to bed that it's not horrible. That's all I can hope
for. Same.
I think, look, United will have to be up for it. I think when you're in a position like this, I think you do have, the players will sort of step up. And that's sort of kind of sad. They should be stepping up every week. But I think with our backs to the wall, they will realise that a lot, I wouldn't say playing for their future, but if they do put in a bad performance here, I think in terms of, I don't think they can win themselves back. I don't think they can win the fans over. If they put a poor performance here, a lot of their United careers in terms of a fan perception, I think is almost over.
Jesus. That is a lot on the line. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just thank you so much for coming on the pod, man. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you finally.
No, really, really appreciate it. And yeah, you weren't too, there wasn't too much sort of, I wouldn't say abuse, but too much banter thrown about, which was
stupid
good.
Banter.
I was preparing for the worst, but no, an absolute pleasure.
And thank you again, Steve, for coming on. Always lovely to have you on.
Not a problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Thanks everyone out there for listening. Please give us a subscribe. Please give us a rating on iTunes, like kind of good stuff. And please, if you want to, follow Tom Simpson on Twitter. I think he's Tom MUFC8. Is that correct?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, I got it right. And also the MUFC Pubcast, who someone thought was the Pubecast, which could be a could be a future name.
I'll discuss that with Larry.
Nice one. And sorry for Larry for not coming on as well. But yeah, follow them at the at MUFC podcast. Find them on iTunes and Spotify, I'm guessing. Where are you guys at?
Yeah, all those. Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud.
Beautiful. Cool. Thanks a lot for coming on. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a very good day or night. And let's smash Man United. Thank you. Bye.